Recording in progress.
Everybody, welcome back to the Noel Kassler podcast, episode 86. Broke out the 65 Gibson LG. I call this the Crosby, Stills, and Nash guitar because every single member played or wrote a song on this particular guitar. As many of you know, and I took it with me on the road all over the world. So, sharing it with you on this Thanksgiving Eve. Thanks for listening. Hope everybody's doing well. I know it's been a while. I was traveling down in Florida, and some of you guys are keeping in touch on Substack, so you see how that's going. And it's going well, and thank you for subscribing, by the way. And, you know, I'm back at it. I was sort of bracing myself for the next podcast because I was so horrified, as any good hard-hearted person was, about the shooting over the weekend at Club Q in Colorado, targeting the LGBTQ community, you know, at the end of a really big push from the GOP towards anti-trans people hatred, right? Because they ran on it. It was a policy point appealing to the ignorance and bigotry of their base, which they wave flags and point guns at and say, I'm the real American, vote for me. You know, those other people are grooming your children. When the leader of their party literally groomed a 12-year-old friend of mine when she took ice skating lessons at his rink in Central Park, and then she ended up in Jeffrey Epstein's house having sex with him and her, or him and Jeffrey and lots of other men. And when I discussed it with her, she was like, you wouldn't believe what those men did to women. So that's Trump. He is a groomer. He has bathrooms in the lobby of Trump Tower, public restrooms, so high school field trips and junior high school field trips would go in there to use the restroom and go to Starbucks and stuff. And he knew it. And he would prowl the lobby to hit on like 12-year-old girls. And he'd walk up to them and say, you should be a model. You know, I have a modeling company. You know, he's a real pig. And if he wasn't a rich white man, he would have been in jail 30 years ago for how he behaves with underage girls. I mean, he bought a beauty pageant to groom girls, you know, Miss Teen USA. Who greenlights something like that? You know, a 40-year-old man judging, you know, a 13-year-old girl on how she looks in a swimsuit and letting his 16-year-old daughter host the show, right? Not to mention beauty pageants like for children, which are very popular in Christian circles, right? They dress up their little kids like they're a 30-year-old, right? JonBenet Ramsey and that whole deal. So there's a lot of twisted grooming in the Christian conservative world, and everybody knows it, but they're trying to push that on the LGBTQ community, you know? A community that I kind of consider myself having grown up in partially. My mom is a lesbian. I knew lots of gay men, lots of lesbian women. I've known trans people my whole life. I've been exposed to that stuff since I was a kid, you know? And did it make me deviant in any way? Did it make me anything other than just the person I am? How I was born? I happen to be born straight, you know? You don't really get to choose that stuff. What's beautiful about life is that you figure out what your truth is and you live it, right? And your family accepts it, right? And your society accepts it, and it's not a big deal. It becomes banal, right? There's nothing different about living in a gay family or a straight family other than how society judges you, okay? You know, I've spent Thanksgivings with two moms, and I've spent Thanksgivings with, you know, straight people, and it doesn't matter, man. It's about love, you know? And there's a lot of talk about the heroism of that guy, Richard Fierro. I hope I got his name right. You know, just a tremendous, you know, act of bravery, and he stopped the shooter. You know, sadly, he had already killed five people, but it obviously would have been a lot worse had that guy not intervened. And he was a combat vet, you know, and he took the guy out. But what struck me most was that he was there with his daughter, to watch his daughter's grade school friend, you know, compete in the show, or, you know, perform in the show, who was a trans person, you know, a trans woman. He was there with his daughter and her current boyfriend, who lost his life in that shooting, and his wife. He was there with his family to go support his daughter's friends in their community. That's America, right? This big, tough guy, you know, Iraq war vet, thought nothing about showing up at Club Q and showing up for his family and his daughter and cheering on and clapping, you know, somebody he knew as a young man who was probably, you know, living out a different kind of truth right now. And there was no problem with it. No shame in that game, because there isn't, right? And to me, that struck me the most, you know, how that guy, you know, how he was there, you know, and on the surface, he would have all the trappings, you know, of what MAGA tries to appeal to, right? But he wasn't buying the BS. He wasn't an ignorant, backwards person who was getting poisoned. He was a progressive, open-hearted, big, tough guy. And he stood up, you know, and he didn't stand up with a gun and shoot that guy. He risked his own life to take out a guy who was bigger than him, a monster. You know, the guy was like 6'6" and 300 pounds and stuff. You know, and then other people, trans women, jumped in and helped subdue the guy. And, you know, it's just like beyond the pale that this is still happening in this country, you know, and you can't not see that as a direct result of the rhetoric on the right in this last campaign. You know, Tucker Carlson every night is going after trans people and the LGBTQ community and calling them groomers. And he's done that since the attack. You know, there was nothing like denouncing it from the right. They were clearly saying, well, that was a club for groomers and shit happens, right? That's their attitude. You know, they're going to capitalize on it. And like I just described about the hero who stopped him, that is bad for them. So they don't want to cover it, right? You know, Fox News was not running clips on the shooting all weekend. They weren't playing the clips of Richard Fierro like CNN and MSNBC have for the last 48 hours, right? Because it's bad for that brand, their brand, right? Because that guy, in a way, symbolized who they reach out to, right? And he pushed back against it. So it's a tough one for them to spin, especially since Lauren Boebert, you know, is a complete gun wacko who poses with guns all the time and narrowly won re-election and had a teenage murderer at the Capitol just 2 days before. You know, she had Kyle Rittenhouse there to be feted in the halls of Congress and to tease out his own picture saying, in 5 years, I get to run for Congress, right? This kid hasn't even gone to college. He's a high school dropout, you know? He was on a murder trial because he shot somebody, and then two people, when they tried to subdue him, waved at the cops and kept walking, and the cops handed him a bottle of water, and he became a hero on the right because he stood for assault weapons and MAGA and shooting people who don't agree with you, right? And a Wisconsin MAGA judge basically apologized, you know, to him for having to even be on trial, misrepresented the crimes to the jury, right? In a way that it always made it sort of sympathetic towards Kyle, you know, and allowed them to demonize the victims. And he got off. He got off in a red situation, a MAGA state, basically, you know, the battleground state that Wisconsin has become. So it's disheartening and alarming. And I was dreading talking about it because I've been in Florida for 7 days, you know, and as I've been saying all year, Florida's basically a lost cause. You know, I know there's a lot of good people living there, but, you know, people would get mad at me all year when I'm like, I don't see how you're going to push back against that guy because he's getting away with so much. And I don't really see any genuine political opposition to him in Florida. People seem to live in a bubble of wealth and privilege in South Florida, and they go to their golf games and they, you know, they live in their nice condos and they watch the sunset. They're not out in the streets protesting against fascism. So you have a fascist guy who's consolidating power really quickly. You know, and I went down there before the election, and I now spent a week, you know, and I spent 7 days each time. I'm now down there afterwards. And it's not a good, you know, it's not a good look on Florida right now. You know, it's not a good thing. And I think DeSantis is going to ruin that state, you know, which has already been ruined by development. You know, South Florida always breaks my heart. It's such natural beauty, and it's just been paved over and lined with strip malls and ugly buildings. And just, you know, the amount of energy they waste in South Florida. You walk into any hotel lobby and it's 65 degrees. You're shivering, you know, in a 12,000, you know, square foot lobby. And you're like, why do you have it on 65? Like, we have an energy crisis. And that's building after building. You know, they're using so much energy and they're being like, F you to the rest of the world. You got a governor who doesn't even believe in like climate change and legislation. And 48% of their budget comes from the U.S. government, you know. So it's basically a giant welfare state that we're supporting that is becoming an incubator for fascism and how fascism will play out on a national level, you know. And that's terrifying. Right. And a lot of that stuff I've written about on Substack, you know, the Trump announcement was obviously a dud. You know, he's going to have to drop the dirt he has on DeSantis. And that'll be delicious because, you know, DeSantis is a bad dude with a bad history. He tortured people in the military. He sat there and smiled, you know, while soldiers tortured combatants, you know, both in the Fallujah surge and at Gitmo. So, you know, there's a lot of dirt down there if the mechanisms, you know, of our judicial system ever sort of seem to work properly, somebody might be held accountable. You know, it's surprising to me that Matt Gaetz hasn't been held accountable, right? He was involved in sex trafficking, essentially, right? He's paying an underage girl, you know. And sex trafficking is funny because when you fly into Fort Lauderdale Airport, they constantly play a message on a loop about the problem of sex trafficking, you know, in South Florida and how it's such a big issue. And while I was there, you know, you can't help but hear this message over and over. And then while I was there, a story broke. It wasn't might have been the Tampa Bay Tribune or the Miami Herald about how they found 6,600 hotels in Florida that had violations for sex trafficking, you know, which can mean like, you know, they found a prostitute coming in and out, a sex worker, prostitute's derogatory term, a sex worker coming in that out of there. So they got 14,000 violations on 6,600 hotels in South Florida for sex trafficking violations. And DeSantis declined to fine them. In every single case, he didn't issue a single fine against sex trafficking because it's big business, right? As I said, it's what Trump does. It's why Jeffrey Epstein was living down there. It's what Matt Gaetz and Greenberg were probably involved in on a deeper level. They're friends with DeSantis. DeSantis is backed by a lot of Russian money. South Florida is like 60% Russian cash, you know, giant oligarch mega yachts, you know, lined up everywhere in the waterways and stuff and intercoastal. So, you know, he's not going to rock the boat, no pun intended, right? He needs that cash. He's not going to start cracking down on sex trafficking, you know? He's going to do whatever butters his bread till he can try to take over the rest of the U.S., right? And why I'm pissed, why it was hard to talk about the LGBTQ massacre in Colorado Springs, because it happens while I'm in a state that has a law called Don't Say Gay. What do you mean, don't say gay? What's the matter with saying gay? What's the matter with being gay? I was down in the Keys while I was there, right? Key West has a huge gay population. You know, Florida has a gay population, as does America. It's normal. Somebody in your family is probably gay. One of your friends is probably gay. You may not know it, but they are. Trust me. You know and love gay people, even if you think you don't. And if you think you don't because they're gay, you need to look into your own heart. You know, and you got to ask yourself why love seems to be objectionable to you. You know, what are you thankful for this Thanksgiving if you're standing in the way of somebody else living their truth and their best life and being in a loving, committed relationship? You know, relationships are hard no matter what side of the fence you're born on in terms of who your partners are. It doesn't matter. You know, a real relationship requires work either way, right? So, and trust and love and those kind of things, they're abhorrent to the right because they're trying to prop up strong men, you know, powerful, rhetorical, tough guys in their minds that teach them that their way is the only way. And there's constantly enemies out there looking to, you know, abscond with their children and ruin their way of life. And that can be immigrants in one breath, it can be gay people, it can be anybody who basically is not a wealthy white person who's asking you to look the other way and appealing to your most ignorant instincts to make another buck off of your dumbass. You know, that's the scam, right? That's what MAGA does. Send me money, sign up, help defeat whatever. You know, it's abhorrent. They're killing people. They've basically declared war on our fellow citizens. And what happened yesterday, right? Another shooting in Chesapeake, Virginia, in a Walmart, right? A symbol of MAGAism, right? Walmart is that community. I know a lot of Democrats and everybody shops in Walmart, but, you know, a Walmart in Southern Virginia. As you know, I was down in Southern Virginia for a few days a couple weeks ago for a family wedding in Southern Virginia, like Shenandoah, you know, Valley, like where it's just when you get out of the sort of nice area, it's, you know, ranch house, redneck, you know, flying old Dixie, you know, flags everywhere. And I stopped counting at how many Confederate flags and Trump signs and Trump 2024 signs were everywhere. You know, every pickup had a symbol, you know, an AK-40, AR-15, whatever you call them, sticker in the back of it. It's like, you know, it's militarized. It's a cultural thing. And that's what we need to understand. You know, we're playing out the politics of it in terms of we pick up a seat here and there and these demographics. But we have to appeal to the humanity of the people that have sort of been like, you know, not just brainwashed, because these guys grew up in it. Right? This isn't a new thing to somebody who's living in Southern Virginia, who's into Trump and Glenn Youngkin, right? Who said thoughts and prayers and we have a mental health issue in this country. Yeah, we do. We have a lot of mentally ill people who were being exploited by other mentally ill, venal Republican men who want to appeal to their base instincts, their character defects, right? That can be seen as a mental illness. And I'm not judging mental illness. I'm in recovery, as you guys know. That's a mental illness, you know. 17 years ago, this weekend, I checked into rehab down at NIH, you know, down in Bethesda, Maryland. And when I was there, a kid killed himself in front of me. He jumped to his death and was mortally wounded, you know, and it was a horrible thing to see. I'd been there about 2 weeks, and they brought us back into our ward and they locked it down. And they locked down the whole hospital at that moment, you know, and it was really horrific. Young man who won't see Christmas again for 17 years, and I had to see his family come. That, you know, they showed him where he landed, like, you know, they left his body there for a while because it was a crime scene. I mean, it was a horrific situation, you know, and I send prayers to that young man's family. But in the moments after it happened, they sort of locked us down back into our little wing. And one of the other patients was like, hey, can I go smoke a cigarette, you know? And the, you know, the doctor was like, no, we're in lockdown. You can't leave. And the patient goes, well, he was in the mental health ward. This is the, like, you know, alcoholic ward or whatever, you know? And he goes, what do you think alcoholism is? You know, like, what do you think is wrong with you? Right? So my point being, there's no shame in mental illness. Mental hygiene is something we have to address in this country, but it has nothing to do with the epidemic of mass shootings in so much as the guns do, right? If we have such a mental health problem, why are we providing guns to mentally ill young males primarily, right? I saw a clip on Twitter last night where a dude threw another dude off a bridge at a San Diego Chargers game as they were leaving the football game. And people filmed it and said, oh, dude, nobody attacked the guy who did that, right? Nobody like said, you just attempted to kill somebody, call the cops. None of that. They just basically cheered him on and kept moving. He threw another human being off of a bridge onto a concrete floor, you know, like 30 feet below. It's horrible. I hope you don't come across the video, but I happened to see it before the guy who took the video took it down so he could sell it to news agencies, you know? And somebody I admire was like, we're broken as a country. You know, Jane Lynch, the wonderful comedian, you know, Jane Lynch was like, we're broken, you know, and we are, right? We have lots of broken young men in this country, and they haven't had their issues dealt with for decades now. You know, sensitivity and mental health and culture were sort of pushed out in the Reagan era. They were, you know, kind of set adrift in the 90s and the Fox era. And then they were exploited post 9/11, right? Because everything became like this screaming evil eagle, tough guy. You know, I'm a sheepdog. And that's when we started getting the giant, you know, Ford F-150s and all the guns and dudes and the cops getting militarized and having tanks, you know, in their local police department and body armor and treating other Americans like their enemy combatants, right? And look at the surge we've had in violence, right? Look at the violent TV we have and video games. You know, violence is seen as entertainment in this country in a way that healthy human beings would not like so much, right? You know, like I talk about Eckhart Tolle sometimes, but if you read like, you know, The Power of Now or A New Earth or something, he talks about like, dude, your pain body is enjoying watching that 20 beautiful 20-year-old woman, you know, dead on your crime show. Like, you know, a healthy, sane person recoils from that. Just like if you remember when you were a kid, you didn't want to see scary, bad things. They would make you cry. And now it somehow makes people feel titillated. You know, and we have to look at that. I'm not being, you know, I'm not editing or saying it's all bad, but, you know, we overconsume violent imagery, right? And then that gets reinforced in people's minds, and especially young men, you know, that feel disenfranchised in the suburbs, you know, or feel justified in doing their killing, right? So this kid who did the shooting in Colorado, he's like 21, 22 years old. He did it 2 days after he saw, you know, assuming he saw it, maybe he didn't, but let's assume he did. Either way, it happened 2 days after Lauren Boebert had the little fat teenage murderer in the Capitol, right? So, you know, what is that message that's being sent to these young men? Hey, look, you kill somebody and get away with it, you get rich, you know? Kyle's got a podcast, he's got a million followers, he's got a team, he's got a PR person, he's got Chicago, you know, the Chicago Times wrote a puff piece on the kid this weekend, right? What's next for Rittenhouse? Who cares? He should be in jail, you know? Who's next should be like what he's worrying about, you know what I mean? He should be watching his back in jail, trying to like rehab his soul. And instead he's out on a publicity tour and getting feted to run for Congress by the Congressional Republican Committee. So this kid who sees that, whose grandfather is a MAGA Republican out in California, his grandfather is an assemblyman in a town in Orange County, I believe, that's very like white supremacist kind of friendly MAGA Trump country. So, you know, this guy felt like he was doing the right thing. You know, enough of these idiots hear this messaging and see the rewards, they think they're patriots. You know, they think they're soldiers. And when all the, you know, the culture sort of rewards this idea of soldiers and freedom fighters, it has its effect, right? I've seen two Republican congressmen in the last 24 hours do this woke military thing that Mike Pompeo said. And they both said, our army's there to kill people and blow things up, not be woke. So just think of that message. That's not what the army's there for, right? Army does all kinds of other things, you know? And nobody in a sane frame of mind enjoys killing another human being. It comes with a heavy cost and toll. You know, the Greatest Generation, those guys didn't come back and brag about killing people. They came back and kept their mouths shut and went to work and didn't really want to talk about it because it leaves wounds in the aggressor, you know, as well. And to have people who don't understand, Tom Cotton was one of the guys who did this, you know, a guy who did false valor and pretended like he was an Army Ranger. He wasn't. He went to a seminar at like Army Ranger school or something. He wasn't a Ranger. But these guys that'll sort of co-opt the iconography and the bravery of being in the military and then say such ignorant, stupid things. You know, that's dangerous, sending that message to young men. Oh, join the army and kill people and blow stuff up. No, you know, go there to learn a set of skills and get out of whatever, you know, town you're in and see the world and get some money to go to college and learn some discipline and skills and serve your country. All valid, you know, all to be applauded. blowing things up and killing people is an insult to the soldiers that serve and protect us. You know, it's defiling their honor, and it should be called out, and it just passes like everything does, because the ecosphere, you know, has become so polluted with this right-wing messaging. You know, think of Twitter and what's happened, right, with Elon Musk. I was down there in Florida. It looked like Twitter was dying on Thursday night, almost a week ago. It's still back on, but it's a shell of its former self. A lot of the interesting people have left. It's not fun being on there anymore. You know, the bots are like 100 an hour for an account like mine. You're just constantly flooded, you know, with the pro-Elon bots, the homophobic slurs, which I get constantly, you know, especially in response to the shooting. And Elon himself retweeted a homophobic conspiracy theory from a right-wing site the morning after Paul Pelosi was attacked in his home with a hammer because his wife was the Speaker of the House, or former Speaker of the House now, right? And this guy Elon, who's controlling the world's largest, you know, communication platform, is retweeting this poison, you know? And not everybody's a bot. There's a lot of people who actually, like, broship that dude. I think I just coined that term, broship, but worship. Like, people look up to him because they're like, well, he's a billionaire. So what? He's a billionaire. He hasn't done a damn thing with it. And his company in Tesla has lost like $300 billion this year, you know, or whatever it is. Stock is down 5%, you know, $30 billion. He probably lost on Monday when his stock tanked. It went down to 169. You know, it was at 400 something in April before he started messing around with his Twitter stuff. You know, that's dangerous, and he's doing it on purpose. He's tanking that platform to make it easier for the right to push out the left, and it's worked. We got to admit it. You know, a lot of people are like, stay and fight. You know, most of those people make their living off of getting retweeted and donations. They have political action committees and stuff. You know, celebrities and people that, you know, get paid for their talents in another sphere are like, I'm out of here. I don't need this, right? He reinstated my friend Kathy Griffin. She didn't come back. You know, she doesn't need that crap. And she had 2 million followers. And she's the reason people were on there. Not just her, but for people like her. They wanted to hear from these people and know it was them. Elon messed up the blue check thing and just let anybody have them. And you'd get trolled by blue checks. And, you know, It's like being at a party and it got invaded just by the most obnoxious, like, dumbass teenagers you've ever met. Like, how long are you going to stay at that party? And when you're trying to sit there and have a serious conversation about the myriad problems in the world right now. So, you know, that's the point. That's the design, you know. And he's a racist fraud who misrepresented his credentials. He doesn't have, you know, he doesn't have the PhD he claimed to have in physics or engineering. You know, he's a self-mythologizing guy like Trump is, right? He grew up rich. He was born on third base in apartheid South Africa. His family owned emerald mines. You know, we're the same age, by the way. I'm about 3 months. I think he was born in June. I was born in March of 1971. So I got about 6 weeks or something, 2 months on him. And, you know, he's done nothing with his life as far as I'm concerned. I'm not impressed with the big companies that you took over that used other people's intellects and skills and claimed it as your own. You know, he's running a non-union shop in Tesla motor cars. You know, no thanks. You don't get to abuse your employees. You know, you don't get to run a big car manufacturer without, you know, union protections for your workers, right? That's what the industrialists tried to do at the early part of this century. You know, and he's sort of the modern version of that. It's the same scam, right? The wealthy factory owner exploiting the dispensable workers and keeping them, you know, just enough to you know, giving them just enough to stay alive, but they're going to shop at the company store, you know, and when they threaten to organize, you're going to come in and punish them, you know, so you can continue to exploit them and then create vast wealth for yourself, right? But Elon's not Andrew Carnegie. He's not building libraries, you know? He's not even pretending to give anything back. He's just taking and being snarky, You know, and that culminated in him allowing Donald Trump's account to be reinstated on Saturday night, which for many was the last straw, you know, and it was also a desperate move on Elon's part because he needs money because all the advertisers have left, right? Nobody wants to be on there anymore. So they all bailed, right? And he assumed that Trump would start tweeting the moment he was let back on. And then, you know, Elon would get the Pillow Guy commercials and the MAGA vitamins and whatever else they sell, the gun stuff, you know, and Trump didn't take the bait. He's not going back, you know, at least for now. He eventually will. And he's not staying away because he has a non-compete agreement, you know, with Truth Social. Okay. Trump doesn't care about agreements or the law. He's not doing it because he's not getting paid yet. He hasn't figured out what his angle is. And, you know, my guess is like the next move for Elon will be to monetize elements of Twitter, you know, and say, you know, if you want to follow Trump, you got to pay $5 a month or something like that. They'll figure out a feature like that, and then he'll be like, I'm back. You know, there's got to be some money in it for Trump, or he's not going to do it. And he understands, you know, he's got Elon over a barrel. But there's more to come on that. That's going to play out further. But, you know, it was another miss on Elon's part and just desperate. You know, Trump attacked our country, right? He didn't like the election results, and he sent his MAGA hordes to attack the Capitol, which they did, you know, in a violent, horrific way. And if you look at, don't do it, but if you look at Trump's account, it's frozen where it was when he got kicked off on January 8th. So you got his text or his tweets on January 6th saying, you know, it's going to be wild, you know, go to the Capitol, come to the MAGA rally, you know. It's like watching a car crash, you know, it's like a time, you know, it's like going back in time, a moment frozen in time of one of the darkest moments in American history, and a moment we haven't recovered from fully, a moment that hasn't been fully investigated, and certainly a moment where the bad actors have not been brought to justice, right? They all defied the subpoenas. We never really heard from Mark Meadows publicly, who's somewhere in hiding, right? Vice President Pence, who almost got hung that day, you know? Hanged by Trump MAGA supporters, is on a book tour now. He's on every network selling his book. He didn't talk to the January 6th committee. He didn't have any guts to really stand up and protect democracy. He just wants to scam, right? He wants to sell his book and see, dip his little pink toe in the water and see if maybe he can, you know, find some support for his own run for president. You know, these are weak men. These are soft hands guys. These aren't guys with calluses that have worked hard. You know, Mike Pompeo is another one of these clowns, you know, who does the anti-woke military stuff. That guy apparently drank his way across West Germany when he did his compulsory military service after getting a free education at West Point, you know, and then getting to go to Harvard, and then under Trump getting to be head of the CIA and the State Department, you know, and in using it for his own grift, his own venality. People remember probably he would have these parties, fundraisers at the State Department, the actual building down in Foggy Bottom in D.C., and he would make the employees serve canopies and stuff to his guests, and he would invite all the donors for his own campaign for president, you know, which he foresaw coming in a few years. And that was it. He was using a slush fund that the State Department has to protect, you know, employees that are overseas and they have an emergency or something. He used that fund for his own parties. You know, he would make aides go pick up his dry cleaning and literally do his dishes, right? His wife used a security detail to move their mom from New Orleans back to Overland Park, Kansas, where he's from. Okay. So like that guy's a scumbag, right? He's a Trump, you know, minor Trump without the charisma, right? He'll never be president. Everyone knows it. But he's the same kind of like, I'm just going to say the dumb stuff and hope people buy it while I'm stuffing my pockets. That's the GOP, right? It's not a mystery. That's all these guys are doing. They're con men. You know, they don't care about legislation. Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't care about anything other than like, wow, I can get rich and famous doing this stuff. Same with Lauren Boebert. You know, Madison Cawthorn, a joke of a human being, right? All lies, all bullshit. Did nothing in office but cause chaos and get busted with guns and get drunk and all this crazy stuff. gets kicked out of the GOP because he opens his mouth about the, you know, the cocaine orgies and all that, which is true. Like, there's some whack stuff that goes down in D.C. We'll get into that some other time. But, you know, I believe him in that. But, you know, that's a kid who got elected on a lie. He said he'd been accepted to the Naval Academy, and then he got in a car accident, so let him go serve his country in another way. It was all BS. He'd been rejected. You know, he dropped out of college after a semester, and he racked up dozens of, like, you know, sexual assault accusations, or at least enough that 100 fellow students signed a petition saying this guy should not be congressman, right? But he looked like a little Nazi, you know, boy toy. So they fell for it in Western North Carolina. They voted for him anyway. Then they got in. He got in. They saw he was a joke, you know. He was embarrassing their home state. And they kicked him out. And he left, right? He left D.C. and packed up his office 2 weeks ago. He's living in Florida now. He left even North Carolina, right? He didn't finish out his term. His term ends in January. He's getting a paycheck. He's getting health insurance. And he's not showing up. You know, try that at your job. You know, and see how your direct deposit keeps going, you know? Sorry, I got to pause it for a minute.
Recording in progress.
All right, I'm back. Sorry about that. Sorry it does that voiceover thing, too. I don't know how to stop that. Anyway, there was some veggie chili burning on the stove, so I had to turn it down. But, yeah, Thanksgiving weekend. You got to cook, right? Anyway, so, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Madison Cawthorn, a fraud. You know, I don't need to dedicate any more time to him, but you get the scam, right? There, and then, you know, he moved to a place like near Cape Coral, Florida, I think, and it's a red state that just, like, lost a seat. I don't know the exact details. Some Florida people will know better, but apparently it's a very deep red area where they, I don't know what happened to the Republican from there, but apparently his seat's going to be up in 2 years. So people from Florida are telling me that, you know, it's a strategic move, and somebody bought him a $1 million house to go into Florida. So I think we probably haven't seen the last of him because he has brand, you know, sort of value to the GOP now, just like Kyle Rittenhouse does. You know, this is the theme of this show, if you haven't noticed. It's like, you know, they're using hatred in a marketplace, right, for political power. They're using infamy as a way to, you know, con their voters into sort of sending these people to D.C. that are going to do nothing but screw them in the end and get rich themselves. So, you know, they see a valuable asset in Madison Cawthorn, and they'll send him down there to Florida, and where he is now, and he'll probably run again in 2 years. And in Florida in 2 years, he'll probably get reelected because, as I said at the top of the show, Florida is not doing well, okay? And I know there's lots of hardworking Democrats there. A lot of them listen to this show. I love Florida, man. I like the beach, you know? Look at me. I'm wearing a jacket inside, you know? Cold weather isn't my favorite, but I live in it because it's cleaner, you know? It's not clean down there. The water's not clean, you know? The air's not clean. The politics aren't clean, you know? And people aren't fighting back. It'd be one thing if you saw a lot of resistance to it, but you don't. You don't see Stop DeSantis signs. You don't hear people talking about politics. You know, you hear them talking about traffic and weather, you know, and the new building that's going up next door or something. So that's terrifying, because if you sleep on these guys, they will take away all your rights and destroy your country, which is what Trump did, you know. Trump didn't destroy it outright, but he changed the face of America. You know, we're a much different country now than we were at Thanksgiving 2015. And anybody who says that isn't true isn't paying attention, right? We now have Thanksgiving dinners where you have to worry about the divisions in your family because some of them may be MAGA types. You know, they may be locked and loaded to tell you that, you know, Biden sniffs hair as a pedo or whatever crazy thing they've pushed into that idiot's mind. He's going to sit there and spew it across the table as he asks you to pass the gravy. You know, I feel sorry for the people who have to endure that. You know, thankfully I don't, but I know I'm kind of lucky in that. You know, it's just, you know, we're at an inflection point, as I say all the time. We're at the crossroads here. You know, there's a couple ways to go. You know, and the only way you want to go is towards love and equality and justice, environmental justice, economic justice, You know, that's what Biden's working on. That's what this administration is accomplishing, and that's why they're trying to shut down any sort of progressive thought. They are. That's what Elon is doing. You know, that's what a lot of mainstream media is doing, right? They're doing the Hunter Biden stuff now. That's all we're going to see now that the GOP narrowly took back the House is investigations into Hunter Biden. There's nothing there. Was Hunter Biden addicted? Yes. Did he have some sketchy stuff going on? Yes. They were probably sort of honeypot situations where, you know, Russians and others knew he was then the son of a vice president and out of his mind on drugs. So you dangle something in him, you know, in front of him that'll allow him to continue a lifestyle of addiction. And he's probably going to not make the greatest choice. And it's clear the guy's made some bad choices. He wasn't in office. You know, he wasn't working in the White House as Trump's children were, two of them, right? His daughter and his son-in-law, who made $460 million while they're in the White House. And then as soon as they left, walked away with a $2 billion cash investment from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to put into a hedge fund, even though Jared Kushner had no previous institutional investment experience. Like, that's like me starting a football clinic or something, you know? Like, I'm going to teach you how to throw a football. Like, I don't know how to throw a football. You know what I mean? You don't just decide to become an investor. You want to give your money to somebody who, you know, went to Harvard Business School and has worked on Wall Street for a long time and, you know, knows what he's doing. And the actual, like, sort of, you know, purse keepers, you know, the guys who oversaw the sovereign wealth fund in Saudi Arabia when the deal came up were like, no, we're not giving this guy the money. And MBS himself overruled them and allowed the sort of largesse to flow into Kushner's account. So that's something to investigate, right? That's something to look into. That's newsworthy, but you're not hearing about it. You're hearing about Hunter Biden's laptop, you know, another Benghazi, another Hillary's emails, another sort of false flag that is a clickbait, easy way to get eyes on a TV channel or clicking on a link, you know, on Twitter or wherever, and taking you away from the truth and taking you on this sort of junk food excursion of like political crap that is going to weaken you. You know, that's going to make you dumber for reading it. That's what a lot of our press is. It's designed to make you stupid, right? That's what, you know, like fast food is designed to make you fat and make your body crave sugar and salt, right? And then you want it again the next day, you know, and a lot of people can't afford anything but it. And there aren't a lot of affordable alternatives, you know, and your kids are screaming for it. You're going to get it, you know, and I'm a child of the 70s. Like, the drinks they gave us were purple back then, you know? Like, I ate a lot of that stuff. I used to eat fast food more often than not because there was a place across the street and I could go buy myself dinner, you know, when I didn't know where my mom was when I was in fourth grade or whatever, you know? But, you know, that shouldn't be everybody shouldn't be eating this stuff. And, you know, and I'm not dissing my mom. I love my mom. I'll get to see her on Thanksgiving. But my point is, you know, there's a lot of bad things in this culture that big business will sell you because they make more money. Tobacco, right? Cars that blow up and don't let you out of them. Teslas, right? You know, all kinds of things. But you have to discern what you consume, you know, and you have to see the big picture of what's going on now because this stuff is coordinated, right? Elon Musk didn't just buy Twitter to feed his own narcissism and his own megalomania, right? It's a coordinated effort. You got this KSA who loaned him the money to buy it, right? The same people who just put that money in Kushner's bank account, the same people who just started a golf tournament with Trump, right? You got the Russians who have their hands in everything and all of GOP politics and all of the NRA. Right, because they want an anti-Ukraine stance. That's what Trump's meetings most likely were about, right? The five, like, you know, that he did in secret with no translator around, you know, or taking the translator's notes or doing it without a State Department official at a dinner, as he did in South America, as he did in Asia, right? He would just run off with Putin before our government could figure out what they were saying. Most of that probably dealt with Ukraine, right? You know, Helsinki probably dealt with Trump's kompromat, you know, and whatever videos Putin has of Trump having sex with some 13-year-old, as I know he has done, right? So, you know, Putin was probably like, here's what I got on you. Now I need you to do me a favor. Go out there and disavow American intelligence agencies and say we didn't meddle in your, you know, election. And what did Trump do? He walked out there like a beaten, whipped dog and said exactly that, because he doesn't want that coming out. And then Trump played nice, right? And then Putin invades Ukraine. And then Elon Musk tweets out a Twitter poll that says, hey, should Ukraine just give part of their territory back to Russia and we'll end the war? You know, vote yes or no. Like, who is Elon Musk to be meddling in that situation? What gives him the right to say that, especially in a war that was horrific, that had as many war crimes as we've seen in our lifetime? You know, you're seeing images come out of Europe that you didn't really think you would see. It's mind-boggling, right? And now that Putin got his ass kicked and he's retreating, right, we're finding a lot of new evidence in these territories of mass torture and just war crimes and horrible things. Putin doesn't want that stuff trending around Twitter and going viral. He doesn't want journalists to be able to easily upload what they're discovering, you know, and start collecting evidence against him for war crimes. He wants you to not pay attention to that. And what's the best way to do that? Take out the communication tool that the left uses most, Twitter, and do it in a big, ugly, stupid way while the focus is on you and how big of a villain and an idiot you are, right? It's the Trump syndrome. You know, I've tried to use this metaphor before. It applies to Elon. It's like somebody goes into a store and flops down in front of the cash register and starts like pretending to have a seizure, and they're flopping around and all the attention goes to that guy, where the other dudes go around the counter, take all the money out of the cash register and run out the back door. You know, that's sort of the philosophy at play here with Elon, with Trump, with these chaos agents. You know, the chaos itself is what makes everybody look. And how can you not? You know, I'm not faulting us for paying attention to it. You sort of have to, in a way, but you also have to be aware of what the big picture is. Why is this happening? And why is it happening right now? You know, why is he taking over Twitter a week before the midterms? Why is he doing all this chaos with blue checks? So now you don't know if a company's real or not, or if a journalist is real, you know, to make you not trust the information you're getting, which makes it easier for people to slip stuff by you and lie to you and amass power, you know? And that's what's going on. That's what's going on. You got to see it for what it is. You also have to see the desperation that somebody like Trump is going to have, who clearly had that flop of an announcement. He had to lock people into Mar-a-Lago. And I was down there. I was like 20 minutes south of Fort Lauderdale and thinking of going there. And then I heard it wasn't till 9 at night. Not that they would let me in, but like I was going to just go check out the vibe, go do a car rant outside or something. But he went too late and talked too long. And the people, you know, they got locked in the room. Like, there's no better metaphor for where MAGA and Trump is at than locking in the people who show up to hear you announce, you know, your presidential run. And he'll still probably beat out DeSantis. He'll still probably be the party's nominee. I don't think he'll end up being on the ballot because I'm hoping he'll be indicted by then. You know, he has to be. And we have a special prosecutor, right? This new guy, Jack Smith, is his name, I believe. And I have to say is his name, I believe, because I don't have a fact checker. I'm just all doing this live talking. So as you know, I make mistakes. But, you know, that guy prosecuted war crimes, you know, in The Hague. So he's a pretty serious straight shooter. And hopefully he's going hard on Trump and Trump gets indicted. He has to. You know, that's really where we're at. Like without that, this republic doesn't stand. You know, if Trump gets away with all this, pack up your bags, see if another country will take you. You know, most of us can't go, you know, but you know, if you're young and you don't like what you're seeing and you don't feel you can fight against it and you can, you know, vote them out of your district and that's not for you, go somewhere else, man. That's my advice. I know that, you know, people probably don't want to hear that, but I can't imagine what this place would be in a second Trump term, you know, or in a second, you know, or in a first DeSantis term. You know, a lot of people that survived Nazi Germany left early, you know, and we got what they had to live. You know, we got what their gifts were for the world. And then we got robbed, you know, of the lives and the love and the spirit and the light of millions and millions and millions and millions of people, because we didn't stop fascism before it was too late. And that's where we're at now. Anti-Semitism, you know, Kanye West is back on Twitter. His first tweet after getting reinstated was shalom with a smiley face. F you, Kanye, you're an idiot and a fraud, right? Which is the other common link in these guys. They get easily manipulated idiots, right? Elon Musk is not some genius, you know? I mean, he's not completely without brains, obviously, but he's not this mad inventor. He wants you to think he is, you know, Nikolai Tesla. He's not. He's an idiot dude who looks like a guppy, you know, who was a rich kid who bounced around in Canadian schools and Penn and was just some dork who hooked up with Peter Thiel and these other rich guys who had PayPal. And that's how Elon made his first fortune. And then he took over Tesla, you know, and fired the guys that invented it and claimed it was all his own, and then did SpaceX and sort of, you know, then he's speaking at, you know, Caltech like he's some kind of genius. He's not. He's a fraud. Just like Trump was telling you he was a business genius. He wasn't. He bankrupted everything. You know, you're going to see that now that his tax returns can finally be released to the House, you know, and they got 3 weeks to look at them before the Christmas break, but and a new Congress. So it only took 7 years, and now we got 3 weeks to try and do something with it. But it's the same thing. You know, Trump wasn't even the developer that he claims to be. He was a licensing operation, right? They would just license the Trump name to a building, and another company would build the building, right? This is after he built Trump Tower and stuff. You know, I'm saying like the last 20, 25 years of Trump organization was just doing these deals, and somebody else would build the building, and he would get a cut of it. You know, that was the scam. And then he would tell everybody that he was this great developer. He's not, you know. It's the con, right? It's the con that people keep running on Americans, you know. And the fact that there's so much money to be made from it on both sides, right? There's money to be made off of the outrage. There's money to be made off the punditry, right? And while that's happening, real people are suffering. Real people are not getting the opportunities they deserve in life. And that's what we have to change. That's what Biden is changing. Despite all this chaos and insanity, they're actually accomplishing things. It's miraculous to me. And I'm not trying to do an infomercial on how great they are. I'm just trying to speak some of the facts that you may not be seeing if you're just paying attention to the sort of fire and anger and ridiculous rhetoric, you know? We're actually doing things. Let's do more. Let's have an assault weapons ban. The GOP opposes that. You know, who isn't nervous about this weekend? Friday's Black Friday. You know, in the best of times, people beat the crap out of each other to be the first ones to get into Target and get the flat screen that's on sale, right? Which has always been an obscene thing to witness. You know, it's like those contests where they're like, run around the grocery store and get free groceries, you know? It's just gross. I understand why people do it. I'm not judging the people who do it. I'm judging the way these little carrots are dangled in front of the American consumer, you know, and you're supposed to be all happy to line up at 5 a.m. and get some other thing that's made in China that you already have in your house, you know, but you feel like getting the next one will make you feel a little better, you know, and then you'll sit there and use it to play video games that you shoot people on, you know, or watch movies, you know, where the good guys kill the bad guys with the same kind of gun you can buy at the same store that you bought the TV in, right? And hope a teenager doesn't get his hands on one and shoot up your kid's school or your wife's shopping center or your husband's shopping center, you know? That's where we're at, you know? All this stuff is connected. The consumerism, you know, the being fed things that are not healthy for you, the chaos, the inability to sort of focus on nature and gratitude and spiritual principles that actually matter, and love and understanding what loving relationships are and celebrating diversity, because it's what makes us great. You know, in Florida, I love to look at birds. There's these amazing birds everywhere, like mind-blowing birds with orange beaks, you know, and these Egyptian ducks or geese or whatever you call them, like, There's iguanas, man. I'm down in like the Keys. There's iguanas walking around. These things that are like magic. Like, what? This is crazy. Palm trees with coconut, you know, like star fruit, you know, like oranges, like all these beautiful things. Like nature and the world is this bountiful, wonderful place with all these magic things that just come out for free. You know, flowers and bees and butterflies, you know? All the colors under the sun. I was hanging out with peacocks down there, you know? There's all this great stuff that if you center yourself and silence yourself, will show up for you. And you'll see that life is a beautiful thing. It's a magical, wonderful place. You know, but people, there's not a lot of money to be made on thinking about those things. So people are now competing for your attention. You know, they want you looking at a screen and getting angry and tweeting back at your enemies, you know. And look, I do that, right? That's my brand. I don't really get paid for it. But, you know, that's why you guys are listening and you know who I am. Because I've done that. Because nobody else, to be honest, was telling the truth about Trump in 2016. All my colleagues know exactly the same stuff I do. And they were like, yeah, but I won't work again if I say anything and he probably won't win. And I'm like, but we know he's a rapist, you know? And they're like, yeah, but, you know, people knew Harvey Weinstein was too and they wanted to work. So nobody talked about it. You know, that's the other thing. You know, Matt Lauer, people knew who these guys were. None of this stuff is a secret to anybody who's been around, you know. Anybody who's been around Trump since the 80s knew Trump was a scumbag, you know. Trump himself told you he was a scumbag. You know, scumbag is the brand, which is another thing. A lot of people like that, you know. He allows them to be their worst selves, to be bullies. And that feels good when you don't know how to get in touch with the softer, subtler emotions, right, that are more, you know, conducive to a balanced soul. It's like the difference between attachment and real love, right? Attachment is excitement, right? You get addicted to an excited feeling and you get programmed to think that way, right? All the love songs we listen to are basically like attachment. I can't live without you. You know what I mean? Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can live without that person, you know? You might enjoy their company, but you won't die if they walk away, you know? But we sort of like, you know, we like to attach ourselves and our happiness to things and think, without that, my life won't be complete, right? That's different than serving others you love. I'm talking about a very specific idea of romantic love that is most commonly misinterpreted and becomes attachment. You get attached to something, and what happens is you block out the rest of the sounds, right? It's like a symphony. Anthony DeMello used to talk about this, a great Jesuit priest who was sort of into Eastern philosophy, big influence on me. And he would talk about an attachment is like you listen to the symphony and you decide you really like the drums, and then you block out the rest of the orchestra. You don't hear the horns and the clarinets and the woodwinds and the brass, right? Because you're like, I'm a drum man. You get this narrow focus and these blinders of what your mind sets itself on and what you think you need to have. And then you change your behavior to get that thing because you think if you lose that thing, you're going to be miserable. So then you don't live your real truth because, you know, you're in a relationship and you don't want to go to a movie and your wife wants to go to a movie and you're like, if I don't go, she's going to be mad at me or whatever, right? You start changing your behavior. I'm not talking about compromising, you know, these are subtle things. What I'm saying is when you start changing your truth to appeal to something that you think you need in another, that's not real love, right? That's an attachment because it has fear at the root of it. And ultimately, it'll never really work out. You can stay in those relationships forever. You can stay in them for a lifetime, but it's not true love. True love is like happiness happens when we come together. You know, when I'm near you, I feel happy. You know, but when you go away, I also feel happy, you know, because I know the happiness doesn't come from you. It's a phenomena that's created between us. You know, it's something bigger than us. It's love. And when you serve that, when you serve a real love without attachment, you realize, hey, I can love everything, right? I don't have to just love the drums. I can love all the other instruments and be open to whatever life presents me. I can love the butterfly. I can love the loneliness. I can love being in a crowd. I can love serving my fellow man. I can love a stranger, you know? And I'm not talking about promiscuity, okay? You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about having an open heart without fear in it, you know? I'm talking about getting past the programming, you know, that our egos use to tell us what we need. And to go see, we already kind of have what we need. You know, if you can open the channels up to gratitude, you realize every moment is a blessing. Every breath is a blessing. Every butterfly, every ray of sunshine, every raindrop, every flower is a blessing. You know? I think it was Rumi, the Sufi poet, I think I said this last week, he would say, you know, flowers grow in the garden. The nature of the rain is the same, but it makes flowers grow in the garden and thorns in the marsh, right? The nature of the rain is the same, yet it makes flowers grow in the garden and thorns in the marsh. I don't know why I keep saying marsh. You get the point? You know? It's how we react to life that determines sort of where our life goes, you know, and where our energy and focus goes. And when we get centered and sort of deal with the gratitude, that's very hard to get in touch with because it's a subtle thing. And you sort of have to work at cultivating this stuff, you know, and yoga is a great way to begin to do that. Journaling is a phenomenal thing to do. Everybody should do that. The morning pages or something that my friend Julia Cameron came up with, where you just wake up in the morning and you write whatever comes to your mind, longhand, 3 pages, just fill it up. You don't think about, you're not telling a story, you're just dog, sex, Radiohead, like whatever, you know, is in your subconscious. I guess that's mine. but you know what I mean? And you just get it out of the way because you're looking for that stillness. You know, you're looking for the stuff underneath all the debris that our ego collects every day, you know? You're looking to get centered, right? You know, that's what the program is. I talk about AA all the time. You're trying to sort of remove the stuff that's not serving you and not letting you be happy, joyous, and free. And when you achieve that stuff or a glimpse of it, you realize, hey, man, all these things I thought I needed won't fix me, right? That's the lesson you hear over and over in recovery. I thought if I got the beautiful wife, the rich husband, the car, the 2 kids, the house in Connecticut, I would be fine. And I wasn't. I was just as miserable. And I was sneaking drinks in the laundry room, right? That's a story told over and over in recovery. Because those things don't fix you. You know, fame is something, you know, that you think will fix you. I fell into that trap forever, you know. I'm not famous myself. I've worked with a lot of famous people. And, you know, you think just being around them, you know, it'll somehow fix you. It doesn't. If anything, it makes you sadder. You know, it makes that hole inside of you bigger. Because when you find out this doesn't work either, you're like, ah, what's next? You know, there's a great documentary on Netflix right now with Jonah Hill, where he interviews his psychiatrist, or his therapist, rather. It just came out like a week ago. It's phenomenal. I highly recommend you watch it over the holiday, especially if you're not feeling too well. But, or even if you are feeling well, I forget the name of it. Stutz is the name of his psychiatrist, therapist. And Jonah's a nice guy. You know, I've been around him once. I'm a huge fan of his. And I knew his brother who passed away, who was managed Maroon 5, that a friend of mine was involved with and stuff. Graham Nash, Graham's kids, you know, they all went to school together. So, and I've worked on a bunch of shows with them and stuff. But anyway, my point is, like, you know, his brother died suddenly about 4 years ago. And, you know, it destroyed Jonah. I shouldn't speak for him. You know, it messed him up. You know, it hurt him. And he was already struggling with some stuff, as it would anybody. And he's brave enough to share this. I won't ruin the film for you. But he shares his struggles with this guy. And the guy talks about the basic plan he has in life. You know, the first thing you do when you're in crisis is sort of get in touch with yourself, right? So you get in touch with your physical self at the beginning. He makes like a little pyramid, and I'll let him show you, but you get in touch with yourself on a physical plane, right? And that's what I'm talking about in meditation or stillness. You know, if you just focus on your toe and trying to feel the, you know, the sensations in your foot and be where your feet are, that might sound simple. That's a deep spiritual practice because you're becoming present. You know, you're becoming more of yourself. I used to have a statement that I would say to myself. I would say, be in your meat. You know, like, be in this body that I'm gifted for just a blink of an eye, really. Even if I run with this thing for 100 years, it's nothing in the span of time. Why waste a second? Why not inhabit every cell fully and be aware of the miracle of life and the gift that I have any given moment, right? Nobody can achieve that, but when you become conscious of these things, that's a good place to start. So he starts with the body, then he starts with like journaling and sort of cultivating, you know, your own inner space and your relationships with others, right? And that any of that can be a spiritual practice, and that was very profound in what this guy said. You know, even if you're sitting there, you know, talking to your father at a diner or something, and it's a difficult conversation, you're showing up for love, right? You're showing up to sort of master a difficult relationship, you know, which is something that they talk about. You know, the Buddhists talk about that. Yogis talk about that kind of stuff too. You know, the goal is to protect, The goal is to sort of perfect your relationship with all other beings. You know, that's what a Buddha or something is working towards. You know, that's what Christ would talk about, right? And then the third thing I forget. So you'll have to watch the documentary, okay? I'm only got two out of three, but what are you going to do? But watch the documentary. You get the point I'm trying to make. You know, there's all kinds of tools out there, and you need tools in your toolbox. Another recovery slogan, you know? You don't know how life's going to hit you, and you don't know when it's going to hit you, but it's going to hit you. It's life. This is life. We're in it, right? And we're all living, you know, we're all living in extraordinary times. These are not normal times for anybody, you know? You could make an argument that it's never been, but, you know, it hasn't been as crazy and chaotic and sort of ramped up as it has recently. And we've never had the sort of environmental calamity that's bearing down on us and that most of us are, you know, living in denial about, right? We're aware it's there, but we're not really taking huge actions to stop it yet. We're still thinking it's okay to have the AC on 65 degrees in some random lobby in Florida that three people are in. You know what I mean? Every hotel room that sits empty, the AC is still cranking it out, you know, in this stifling heat. So it's like the outside's only getting hotter and we're only trying to get the insides cooler. And that's a paradox that's strangling the planet. You have to address it on a big global level. You have to outlaw plastic forks and spoons. You know, the right makes that a joke. Ted Cruz just, you know, made a tweet the other day, I should have protected plastic straws. You know, they try to get you stupid. They try to get you to think all this woke stuff is bullshit. It's not. It's designed to save us. You know, I get handed so many plastic, like those little plastic packages with a spoon and the knife. I was collecting them because I don't throw them out. I had like 20 of them. You know, after 4 or 5 days in Florida, that stuff should be illegal, right? Because it shouldn't be on the consumer to reject that or recycle that. You shouldn't be allowed to sell it. You can make the same utensils out of bamboo. That should be the law. You shouldn't have a plastic container, you know, for every food product you buy, right? It's going to be hard to get politicians to really kind of accept that, you know, and it takes a radical, I think radical acceptance, by the way, was one of the third kind of points this guy was talking about, which is another sobriety tenet. You know, if you can accept what's going on, it doesn't mean you have to live with it. It means you first have to accept it in a way that you're not oppositional to it. You understand why it's happening, but you think there may be a better way, right? The plastic forks things, and I'll shut up here in a minute. When I worked for Jackson Brown, the first U.S. tour I did, I'd already been over in Europe. We decided, like, you know, his partner has a thing called the Plastic Pollution Coalition that she founded with somebody else, and it was trying to end the use of single-use plastics, ban the use of them, because they're just terrible. So we decided on our summer tour we were going to give everybody recyclable containers to eat out, you know, and aluminum water bottles and all this stuff. And we started, I was in charge of like getting all the food, like after show food. You know, when you do a concert, you order food for, you know, a whole crew. So it was my job to do all that kind of stuff. And it was hard, right? It was hard to explain to people, you know, why I didn't need all the to-go crap that was coming, you know, with the food. Can you just put the barbecue or whatever, you know, in an aluminum tray and I'll handle the rest? It was very difficult on the consumer end to effect change is what I learned. That stuff should be legislated. Like we did in New York City, you know, we banned plastic bags, people accept it after a while. They bitch at first, and then they realize, all right, you get used to it. Just like how you can't smoke in bars anymore. You get used to that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So we have to sort of get conscious and aware of all this stuff to the point that, you know, we can elect leaders and effect change at a legislative level, right? That's going to begin with a cultural type of thing, you know? That's going to begin with a change in our hearts. So as much as we talk about politics, and I certainly do, you know, talk about what you can do, because you have so much power in your own life, in your own soul, amongst your own family. You can be such an agent for change, you know? And we're going into a holiday that, you know, we tend to sit around and give gratitude, you know, for what we have and what we're thankful, you know, to have this year. Be thankful, you know, for the opportunity to make a difference when the world needs it most, you know, and enjoy your time with your family and your friends, you know, and get through this weekend, you know, and give a prayer and a thought to those who won't, you know, who thought they were. All those people we lost this week in those shootings, they all had Thanksgiving plans, right? They had somewhere they thought they were going to be tomorrow. They're not going to be there. It's going to be empty tables, you know, empty chairs at those tables. You know, there's going to be families that are never the same. You know, we can't keep doing this as a country. We can't keep doing this to each other. You know, we need to all get involved to affect change. Okay? So thanks for listening. This is episode 86 of the Noel Castler podcast. I didn't mean to be a bummer. I'm running out of light here too. Sorry for the light. You know, it got dark. It's winter in New York. It gets dark at 4:30. But I love you guys. I love that you listened. Somebody, Denise Castler, bought a t-shirt this week. Thank you very much. If you like the Noel Castler podcast t-shirts, you can find them on my website. She's going to have my name on her t-shirt. You know, we have the same surname. I don't know her, but I appreciate her. And that's it. You know, check out the Substack. You don't have to pay anything to sign. You just email, you put your email in there and it shows up in your inbox. I work very hard on those. I'll be writing some more of them over the weekend. Appreciate all the people that have signed up so far. I'm going to give you like a bonus episode of the podcast soon, because I know it's just me ranting all the time. So I'll bring on a friend or something to talk. So, you know, to give you a break from all the, you know, all the down stuff that I talk about. But I love you guys. I basically wanted to get this out before the holiday in case you wanted to listen to it. And I want you to know you're not alone, right? None of us are alone, even if you're spending Thanksgiving alone. And I've spent many Thanksgivings alone, you know. But and I've spent many with family, you know. You're never alone. There's love in your heart, man. People love you, you know. You can love others. There's always something to do. And enjoy it. We all have blessings. Let's try to use them. Until next time, this is the Noel Castler Podcast. Peace.